Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Tea with Claudia and B. This is B, not Claudia.
This is Claudia, not B.
And today, we are jumping into the world of Emma Woodhouse.
Yay, Emma. The matchmaker, royal matchmaker.
Little Emma. She's just the cutest. So, Claudia, I'm going to start off telling you some history about Jane Austen's life during the making of Emma and the publishing and all this stuff. Are you ready for this? Are you ready for a little Jane corner?
I am. I am. Okay. Very much okay, so.
Good. That's ready. Good, because we have a whole podcast about it. So, you better be ready for Jane. Okay. So,
oh my God.
Here is what I have learned. So first off, Emma, love her. I think this one is like a magical one, but Emma has like a little extra magic after learning this, because this is actually the last novel that she wrote entirely and published in her lifetime. So this is like the last one that we're getting. And then all the other books after that were published after she passed away, which I'm so glad that we still got those books, but Emma was kind of like the last one for her. Mm-hmm. So, according to her sister's notes, Jane started writing Emma in January of 1814, and then she finished writing it in March of 1815. So it was a pretty quick process for her. People speculate that Jane sought out a new publisher to get this one out in the market, because there was all sorts of drama with the last guy, but we don't know exactly like what caused it. Whatever it was, she ended up finding one, a John Murray, who was a prominent publisher in the London area, and she wanted him to take over the publishing for Emma. So she was really involved. She had, like, you could tell she learned a lot with the other books, because with Emma, she was like pretty involved and pretty savvy with getting this one published. So his original offer, Mr. Murray, was obviously not that great, because Jane came back and she wanted to negotiate, because she is a boss. And so she was able to renegotiate with him. She thought that the amount that he was offering was too low, so she got him to agree to publishing Emma on a commission basis, which means that along with the second edition of Mansfield Park he agreed to print, she would pay for the printing and the advertising of the book, and then Murray was going to receive a commission for distributing and selling the book, which seemed like a really good idea. He was really well known in the publishing circles, so she was like, if he's the one that's selling the book, we're going to be fine. I'll cover the costs, and then he'll earn the commission. He'll be more motivated because of the commission, and we're good, okay? Also, because all of her other novels had sold out, they were pretty confident about Emma selling out, so they decided to print 2,000 copies of Emma for their first edition, which was the largest print that she had done so far.
Yeah, I mean, especially back then, that's like a lot of copies.
Oh, right? I was thinking about that. I was like, today 2,000 does not seem like a lot, but 2,000 books back then? Holy, like,
yeah. Jane.
Way to go, Jane. Okay, so Emma was released, and like her other novels that had been published before, this one was published anonymously. So the title page only stated that, what did it say? It said, by the author of Pride and Prejudice. So people knew it was the same author, but they didn't know who she was. But unlike her other novels, this work included a dedication to the Prince of Wales, which her other ones didn't have a dedication or anything like that. So, oh, I think this is kind of a funny story here. This dedication to the Prince of Wales. Jane actually did not like the prince at all. It was kind of, you know, like people who like Biden or don't like him. You know, she didn't like him. But he liked her. He actually had all of her books his own personal book collection.
No.
And librarian really liked Jane as well. So a couple months before Emma was published, Jane was actually visiting her brother in London, and her identity was figured out somehow by the prince's librarian. He did his little searchy search that those librarians do, and they figured out who Jane Austen was. Uh-oh. So the librarian invited her to tour Carlton House, which is where the prince lived. And the invitation from the librarian also had a little note in it that said she was invited to come to the house and she was at liberty to dedicate any future work to the prince. Which obviously that was like a not so subtle royal decree there, you know, and Jane decided that should not be ignored. So she dedicated her next novel to him, which came out later that year. And that's why that one has a dedication when the other ones did not. So what do you think? Did she give in to peer pressure or was she a smart little cookie for doing that?
No, I don't think that she gave in to peer pressure. I mean,
I think she had an opportunity and she took advantage. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, no. She was a businesswoman, right?
Yeah. She was like, taking advantage of what she could.
Yeah.
Now, despite it being an awesome novel and a wonderful one that sometimes is considered to be my favorite because, you know, they're all my favorites. It just depends on my mood. Emma did not actually do very well in sales at first, which sucks because they were totally counting on that.
Yeah. So, that surprises me.
I know, right? So as sales weren't going through the roof like they thought, Jane was actually getting really worried, and she kind of expressed how she was scared that people were going to compare Emma to Pride and Prejudice and Mansfield Park, which were like the last two novels that had done really mm-hmm. well. And she said that in comparison to them, she was worried that it would seem either too boring against Pride and Prejudice or it would seem too silly against Mansfield Park. And she's like, this is a different one, but if they're comparing it, it's going to be bad, you know, like she kind of recognized that once it was out. She even wrote that she thought that Emma Woodhouse would be a heroine whom no one but myself will like much. Mm. Isn't that kind of sad?
I know. And I've always wondered because I don't know, like, because I love Emma and even in her snootiest moments, I mean, she's still is good to her community. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. But I think Jane was onto something there. Like, it wasn't a very thrilling book. Like, compared to Pride and Prejudice, that had all this scandal and it was thrilling. And then Mansfield Park was kind of like an intense moment of this heroine having to, like, make tough decisions. You know what I mean? So this one, Emma kind of has it made and is kind of silly in comparison. She's not faced with the same dilemmas that these other heroines are. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that it's not good. It's just a different flavor, you know?
It is a different flavor. Yeah.
Yeah. So even though this one was seen as a less exciting story when it first came out, there were actually many literary critics at the time that really liked it and wrote a lot of good things about it, which I think perpetuated it being more popular later. So Emma does stand a little separate from her other rights, from her other books, and you can tell they talk about how, like, Jane's other heroines, unlike Jane's other heroines, Emma is rich and she's influential in her social circle, and she doesn't consider marriage to be her goal in life or the key to her future happiness, which is pretty different. Like, that's not a focus. She focuses on marriage for other people, but that's not, like, a focus for her, even though she does get married in the end. That's the twist, but it's, like, a totally different situation there, you know?
Mm-hmm. It is.
So, after everything was said and done, Jane finally received a check for 38 pounds in profit from Emma after she paid John Murray for all of his portion and covered the costs and everything like that. Which, in today's money, that would be a little over $2,000.
Okay.
That's what she made for her first edition of Emma.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I wonder if she had any inkling of, like, how it could have been for her, you know?
I know.
And then also, I mean, it's so interesting how things turn out. Like, how popular would she be now if she lived to a super old age and published her works when she was alive? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Nobody knows. But I want to know.
I know. I wish we knew more about, like, her personality and Oh, you know, my I know gosh. That...
Those journals and those letters that Cassandra burned. Dank her, Cassandra!
I know. I just wonder what in the world it could have could be that's so scandalous.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it? Like, do you think it was scandal, or do you think it was just that she was private and she was like, I don't want to give up control of my privacy?
Maybe a little bit of both. Maybe somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
You know?
Probably. Most people are a mix of things, I guess.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay, so now we're going to transition into talking about the two 1996 Emmas.
Yeah. Yeah, did you guys know that there are two 1996 Emmas?
Mm-hmm. For the longest time, I did not know that.
Like, Me neither.
No clue. No clue. Yeah. Because I always would watch the Gwyneth Paltrow version.
Mm-hmm.
And not the...
Kate Beckinsale. Oh, my God.
Yes, thank you. Good Lord. It was, like, in my head, and I was like, don't forget her name, don't forget her name, don't forget her name. And I love Kate Beckinsale. And oh, yeah. So the first time I watched it was actually, like, because of Bea, like, because her and I covered it on the podcast last season. Mm-hmm. And so, anyway, but I highly recommend both, honestly. I was really happily surprised by the Kate Beckinsale version only because I thought it wasn't going to be very good, only because I barely heard about it. Like, no one really talked about it. Like, I didn't even know it existed. And, like, yeah. As a huge Jane Austen fan, like, how did I not know that that one existed?
Girl, I don't know, but it was the same for me. I didn't know for years and years. And I guess I could see why, because Gwyneth Paltrow, I mean, we know she's so influential in Hollywood. But if there's a movie made, like, at the time, Kate Beckinsale versus Gwyneth Paltrow was, like, hella popular mm-hmm. and adored by everyone. So that mm-hmm. one, of course, is going to be more popular. And it also, comparatively, like, the writing of the book, that one is very trendy and very cutesy and all of that. And the other one, I feel like... I mean, Emma is a great story, and they did a good job telling the story, but I didn't really feel like they dressed it up too much beyond that.
Yeah, you know? But I will say, I think that some of the casting choices in the Kate Beckinsale version lean more towards the book.
I agree with that.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah, I think they had Harriet some cuter things. Is, like, way more how Harriet should be than okay, the
but Toni Collette, I freaking love her.
I know.
She's so good.
Yeah. Yeah, she is good. But, like, Samantha Morton as Harriet Smith in the Gwyneth Paltrow version, like, uh-huh. she just looks more of how Harriet is described in the book. She's just more age-appropriate. Do you mean the Kate Beckinsale one? Yeah, the Kate Beckinsale. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that she is really good. Mm-hmm. And she is, I had watched Gwyneth Paltrow before I read the book. Mm-hmm. And then after reading the book, I was like, oh, I can see Harriet more as this other chick. But,
mm-hmm.
but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, but other things that I thought that... The Mr. Knightley, though, of course, I like the Gwyneth Paltrow version, Mr. Knightley, better.
Oh, he's so cute.
He is so cute. He's more of a gentler Mr. Knightley than the other one.
The other guy is kind of stern, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He is. But I think, honestly, like, Kate Beckinsale and Gwyneth Paltrow, like, their performances are equal in my mind.
Yeah. I agree. I think they have very different... approaches and everything, but yeah, I think they're equally good, just different.
Mm-hmm. They are just different, yeah,
but they're both so freaking cute that, like, you guys just go watch them. Like, are you ever gonna regret watching two beautiful women on screen flitting about in beautiful dresses? No.
It's interesting though, because the Kate Beckinsale version is a little bit more, it seems older, even though they're the same.
Oh my gosh, you're so right. I thought about that too. In fact, I was actually kind of surprised they came out the same year.
I know. I was like, that's weird. So, yeah. But I mean, I highly recommend both of them. But of course, like, my favorite Emma is the, I just love the 2009 one. the four-part series, oh, yeah. But we'll talk about that later.
So good. Also, in the Kate Beckinsale version, there's, like, some funny thing. It, like, begins and ends with chickens in a weird way. And
yeah, I don't like know that's why. Off-brand yeah, Emma. That's true. Yeah, because it's not, like, something, I don't know, that's, it is off-brand for Emma, because Emma's, like, rich. She doesn't deal with chickens. Yeah.
I mean, maybe strange. That's why they were like, see, she has her own chickens to slaughter. She's so loaded. I don't know. It was just, I thought that was weird. And I remember us talking about it at the time of being like, what's with the chickens? Like, what is with the chickens? I still don't need to know.
I can't. Okay, so I'm super excited. Because we get to talk about Mr. Knightley and Emma's relationship. And for those of you who don't know, Mr. Knightley is like my favorite Jane Austen man.
Oh my gosh, you have a crush on him too?
How can you not?
Girl, I have a crush on him too.
How can you not have a crush on Mr. Knightley is what I want to know.
Only if you're heartless.
I know. So, Mr. Knightley.
Go on.
I just think he's so, he's everything a man ought to be, Bethany. So I love their relationship because they've known each other their whole, like, well, I don't say that. Mr. Knightley has known Emma since she was born, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. He was 16 when she was born.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just can't remember. Do you know how old her older sister is? Like, what's their age difference?
I want to say they're 4 years difference, but I don't know that for sure. I could have made it up for you guys.
Well, I'm just wondering because they were just, like, lifelong friends, like, the families, and then that's when Isabella and Robert... Right? That's his name?
Yeah.
Became, like, sweethearts. Okay, so for those of you who don't know, Mr. Knightley, his brother, is married to Emma's sister. And so Emma and Mr. Knightley are always been forced to be, you know, in the same room. In the same vicinity. But what I love about...
Interjection. Isabella and Emma are 7 years apart.
Okay. I just found the answer. So that makes more sense because then it's like they have more, yeah. If they're further apart than that, then that makes more sense of why Isabella would get married to Robert, you know, further, and then Emma wouldn't get married for a while.
Yeah.
But what I love about their relationship is he sees so much in Emma, and he sees, but he doesn't, he gives her advice, but it's not, he doesn't give her advice in a way that's selfish. So, for example, like, you know, when you can tell when, like, someone's trying to elicit a response from you, you know, and they're trying to, like, get you to do something, that's not how he is at all, and I just love that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a really good way to describe that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, it's more about...
He doesn't want her to act how he thinks she should. He wants her to just act her best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And she, a lot of her actions and her decisions were... purely selfish and purely for her own vanity.
Whim, her own entertainment.
Exactly. And I think it's from losing her mother at such a young age that she didn't have that motherly advice. And also she had to grow up so fast because her mom died. Her sister left the house. Like, you know, when she was still young. So she kind of had to step into this motherly role before she was ready for it. And so thank God for Mr. Knightley that Mr. Knightley was able to be there and help in some way, even though she didn't want him to in a lot of ways. But
yeah. And I think that's probably why he does have the patience with her that he does, because he has seen her grow up and he understands that mm-hmm. while she's had a charmed life and she is, you know, privileged and blessed in her circumstances, that she hasn't necessarily had it easy the whole time and she's been through, like, hardship and heartache. And mm-hmm. so he, like, he values what she has learned, but he's also like, but there are some things that you are lacking as well, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Which actually, when you think about it, isn't that, like, just the most romantic idea of somebody being like, I actually see you. I know who you are. I see your flaws and mm-hmm. I see your virtues and I do accept both.
Yeah, it is. It's just so great.
Nightly.
I know. And I always wondered, like, I have heard it said before that he waited for her, but I don't know if he did. I just wonder, like, when matrimony with Emma entered his mind.
See, I feel like it was the Box Hill picnic. Yeah, I think that moment of him, like, seeing her act poorly and his intense reaction, I think there were two things happening there. I do think that he was disappointed in her, but I also kind of think that was a moment of him, like, realizing I really care about her beyond just this long family friendship and our connection of childhood and siblings that have been married and stuff like that. And I mean, he even talks about how he thought that Frank Churchill was, like, meant for her and mm-hmm. that they were going to end up together. And he didn't ever really like Frank, and that could be, you know, contributed to, because Frank was a little bit of a jerk, but then mm-hmm. also maybe there was, like, a little envy happening or anything, but I do think that was kind of, like, a moment for him. And then he, like, leaves shortly after that, and he goes to his brother's for a long time, and that's when he's, like, talking to his brother John about his feelings for her and stuff. I feel like that was a moment where he kind of realized his feelings for her, you know?
I think so too. So much was happening at that picnic. Like, so much tea was spilled.
That was a dramatic picnic. And it's, like, set in this scene that's supposed to be so simple and lovely and
yes.
all this. And then there's all this behind the scenes going on.
Yes. I mean, with, like, oh, I was just telling Bea about my new kitten, and she is. She just pops right up.
Okay, there, Gigi.
Oh, yes, I have a new kitten, and her name is Georgiana Darcy Fane. So you guys can follow me on TikTok because she's viral.
She's so popular.
I literally found her on my steps on a couple Sunday nights ago, and and I kept her. So anyway, so I have two Jane Austen cats. So, okay, where was I? apologies. Yes, but so much drama was happening at that picnic, and also, like, so much drama that we didn't know about until we find out later, like, with Frank and Jane.
Yeah.
I mean, like, all mm-hmm. of that, like, undertones so much. And, like, a lot of people focus on the Miss Bates drama, which is good to focus on, too. But, I mean, there's so much more going on that people did not know about. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. Very yeah. true. But yeah, I kind of feel like I really don't think that he viewed Emma as, like, a potential wife for most of their friendship.
Mm-hmm.
But,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think that maybe there were some moments of, like, oh, I really care for her. Like, I guess I just feel like, am I the only one? When you have a friendship with a guy, there's always, like, a little voice that's like, well, should he be the one that I'm going for, or could I care about it? You know what
it's
I mean?
It's true. No, it's very true.
I just feel like there's always that thought that is mm-hmm. present, even if you think it for a second, then you're like, no, definitely not. It just, it's there. And I think it should be there, because you have to kind of, like, gauge where your friendship's at and all of that, but.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, there always is something, a little something there, mm-hmm. even if it's like a, yeah, no.
I thought about it for a minute. That's all it took.
Yeah, exactly.
Immediately no. As our beloved Justin Bieber, immediately no. Immediately no.
Yes. Now I'm all, like, blushing because you brought up Bieber.
Oh, Biebs.
Oh, the Biebs. I love him. He would actually, like, be a good Frank Churchill, like, if he ever went to the acting realm.
Yeah, that's true.
I always think of Frank Churchill as this, like,
like frat boy looking guy, you know, like I always think of him as
that. Yeah. I mean, he kind of has that attitude for sure. Isn't that funny how there's these attitude archetypes that have survived hundreds of years? Yes. Where you're like, oh, they're like this. Oh, immediately I know who you're talking about, exactly. What you're talking about, and how they act.
1,000%. 1,000%. Gosh. Yeah. So, but I really do admire their friendship, their relationship, I should say. And I think it's so strong because they just know each other inside and out, and it's beautiful. And so they're able to create such a beautiful life based off of that. And I think that it's important to have relationships like them because they're the leaders in the town and people look up to them, and it's just all around good fun.
Yeah. Yeah. There is something really lovely and beautiful about them kind of surprising each other with their love, you know?
Yeah.
I like it.
I like it too.
So, in conclusion of these two Emmas back to back, what do you think, like, your vibe, like your one sentence or your couple word description of Gwyneth Paltrow's version and Kate Beckinsale's version would be? Like, if you had to compare them, one is this and one is that.
Okay.
What
would you say? I think the Kate Beckinsale version is a little bit more out there and a little bit more, I would describe it as sharper in a way. Kind of. Because, I mean, you have, like, the chicken situation, and then there's a little bit more of the... There's a little bit more of the fantasy with that. Like, there's a scene where Emma's, like, in the church, and then she sees, like, Harriet or something, and it, like, kind of zooms out. And so there's more of this, that vibe going. I would describe the Gwyneth Paltrow version as more light, airy, tea-timey, walk in the parky.
Yeah.
Walk in the parky.
I'll walk you in the parky.
I don't know. What would you describe, like, the difference?
I think between the two, I would say that Gwyneth Paltrow is the trendy version of Emma, and Kate Beckinsale is the stage production version of Emma.
That's a good way to describe it.
Right? They have those vibes. Like, it's kind of... I really like both of them.
I do, too.
But it is interesting how different they are. Even though they do follow the book quite well. One a little bit more so than the other. But they follow Emma. They don't, like, make huge changes to the plot or anything like that. So, it's just... It's interesting. The vibes that can be totally different.
I know. But Jeremy Northam, I mean... Whew! He's my favorite Knightley.
Jeremy, he's so cute.
Like, even above the 2009. I mean, I like the 2009 guy, but I just love Jeremy.
He does fine, but he doesn't. Yeah, he doesn't compare. Actually,
I know.
He's not bad. He's not
no,
bad.
No.
But he's not Jeremy good.
No. Anyway. Oh my gosh, it's hilarious. Alrighty. Well, this has been great. It's been a minute since we've recorded, so this has been fun. So
yeah, this is a good little jump into Emma there.
Yes, very much so. So tune in for our next one. And I am getting Miss Gigi off of the laptop. And thank you guys so much for listening and for your support. And we love you guys.
And we love you so much. Don't forget to like and follow and leave a review for us.
Yes, tell us what you think about Mr. Knightley. Like, who's your favorite Jane Austen man? All the things.
Yeah.
I know that you're all are going to be like, Mr. Darcy. But really, Mr. Knightley is the way to go.
We are not talking about Darcy. We are talking about Knightley now.
I know. We are.
And... Martin, Mr. Martin.
Ah, oh,
he's cute. Stop. He gets our attention as well.
He is such a cutie pie. I love him.
Mr. Martin. My Mr. Martin.
Oh. And he wanted to see me the next day and the day after that and all the days ever after.
Okay, you guys. Well, we want to hear from you all the days ever after. So aww. Reach out to us on social media, leave a review, send us an email. It's all Tea with Claudia and B. And we'll catch you next time.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Dear Mr. and Mrs. Knightley, finally, you two were meant for each other, and I mean that sincerely. Emma, I've always been such a huge fan of Mr. Knightley, and I know you might roll your eyes at that, but I love the way that he isn't afraid to tell you when things aren't right, and he's not afraid to make you angry, and honestly, I think that's a wonderful quality to have in a partner. I also love that he judges people based off of their true character and can tell when someone is being wishy-washy or fishy. And he also is the hero, as we saw with him with Harriet at the ball when she had no one to dance with and he danced with her. And it's just simply beautiful. And what's beautiful about your relationship is you both balance each other out. Emma, you help him see the fun in life. And keep everything in order while he helps you see the beauty in life. And what's beautiful about the whole scenario is that you two really know each other, and therefore your love is so believable. Congratulations, and I am very excited to hear all about how Mr. Woodhouse is doing with you two in the house together. All three of you. Happy family. Again, congratulations. Claudia. Hi friends, Claudia here from Tea with Claudia and B. You probably are wondering why we haven't posted on here in a while. There has been an update to the platform we are using, and to be quite honest, it's a little confusing and we don't like it as much. So we have decided to transfer our podcast to make it easier fully on Instagram. We're just going to fully do it on Instagram, and then we also are going to put our videos onto our YouTube channel. So that's what we're going to be doing from now on. It's just going to be easier all around, and we'll be able to interact with you guys more on there. So if you're not following us on Instagram, please do Tea with Claudia and B. It's going to be so much more sustainable and more fun for B and I as well. So we apologize for the issues that we've been having, and we look forward to seeing you on Instagram and YouTube. Tea with Claudia and B. See you there.